change the culture, the mindset, the expectation level, and improve the brand of Indiana Hoosier football.
Listen, sometimes when you play the game we play, you got to wear a little egg on your face, Brad.
That's the nature of college ball. College sports.
It's how the
you got to own it.
It's how it goes sometimes.
You got
to
own it.
You have to own it.
Yeah. I'm proud of this team. They showed a lot of fight. They were clearly outmatched, and it just shows that they just have a lot of work to do. The fact that they made it this far in their first year under Cignetti with the roster that they had is so impressive, and I'm even more convinced than I was before the game that Indiana will get to a point to where they can contend for a national title. Now, when will that happen? Probably not next year. Maybe not the year after that, but it will happen in the future as long as Cignetti's on campus, and I'm convinced of that moving forward. So now it's just all about building from here. Already got a head start making a college football playoff appearance. It's all about just building up from here. That's what it's all about. Just trying to get better year after year after year.
100%. I think the thing that has been lost in the last couple of days, especially in the national discourse, and trust me, we're going to get to that in a second. We've got a lot of thoughts about it. We've probably been talking about it for 2 or 3 days. But the thing that's been lost is that this was such an impressive season that deserves to be celebrated for Indiana. And I don't care what anybody says, pundit, player, whatever. What those guys did in that room, coaches, players, staff, university, the fans who showed up and bought in, this entire season is, like, this was incredible. We were talking about this right before we came on, but you were like, this was a first-year head coach in the Big Ten. I don't care what your schedule looks like, but every single person who had a voice picked this team to finish second to last or last in the league. And they made the college football playoff and had the entire world believing it was going to be a game.
Yeah, the only person before the season that didn't have a second to last was Phil Steele, who was being cheeky and was guaranteeing Indiana to a bowl game. He did pick them 12th in the conference and had them going bowling. That is nowhere near what they ended up doing. And he was being of the outlier of, you know, hey, I think Indiana's going to have a good year. And there are a few others that were saying that, like, hey, watch out, they might go bowling. Making a college football playoff, regardless of the result in round one, a team that will be remembered in Indiana lore as the first Cignetti team, a team that will be remembered in a very good light by Indiana fans as the team that really built the foundation of what's to come in the future. And I'm expecting the future to be very, very bright. I don't expect this to be your last playoff appearance.
No. And whether it's good or bad, people are going to remember this Indiana team. And when you look back on the 2024 season, if it's not the first or second thing you say, it's definitely in the top five, Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers. Like, they were a part of the fabric of this college football season and launched our fan base to a position where we have to be taken seriously. The amount of people that came out of the woodwork to tell me I was an idiot this week on Twitter just tells me we're moving in the right direction. Because if they truly didn't care, nobody would take the time to try and put us down. But you see the machine start moving, the Indiana machine. And it's been some nasty work from the national media, the agenda and the way it's flipped against this team specifically. But I'm not going to let that take away from what happened here. These guys are legends on campus. Like you said, they laid the foundation for this team. They'll always be remembered as that first Cignetti team, the first guys who bought in, the ones who believed. They made us believe. And nobody can ever take that away from them. This team produced 3 All-Americans. They had multiple All-Conference guys and did it in the face of every single person they saw telling them they couldn't. That can never be taken away from them.
Exactly. Can never be taken away from them as much as, you know, Kirk Herbstreit wants to. It's not going to work. This is a special group and the foundation, the building blocks of what's to come as Indiana ascends to a football power. I didn't stutter there. Football power. It's going to happen.
Listen, you can dislike Kurt Cignetti all you want, and I'll continue to refer to White Boy Rick's three reasons why people don't like Kurt Cignetti. One, you don't love ball enough. Two, you just didn't understand the shape of Indiana's fan base and what we needed. And I don't even remember what three was. Oh, yeah, three is he said something mean about your favorite team and it hurt your feelings. So I don't care that my coach offended you. If he did, good. It means we're doing something right. And the fact that everybody's so pissed off means they were taking it seriously. Notre Dame's in the locker room on Instagram Live after going show this to Sig. Will Howard's on the sideline stomping out a cigarette. 13 million people watched Indiana play Notre Dame. And if ignorant people have the nerve to tell me this team doesn't matter, doesn't mean anything, beating them doesn't matter, give me a damn break. Give me a break. And it's going to be eye-opening when Notre Dame plays Georgia, and that's going to be a really good game. And it's going to – like, the farther away we get from this whole selection bullshit mess, the more fondly the general public's going to end up looking back on this Indiana team and being like, damn, they actually accomplished a whole hell of a lot.
When Ohio State faces Notre Dame in the national title game, and you look at 11-2 Indiana losses to Ohio State and Notre Dame, this team's going to be viewed a little differently.
100%. 100%. But we do have a little bit of smoke. Oh, I would say a little bit of smoke. There's a lot of smoke. It's pretty smoky out there. But let's get to some positives first. Incoming 2025 wide receiver LeBron Bond, first team All-State wide receiver, kick returner, and punt returner. Shout out to LeBron Bond, and pumped to have him in a Hoosier offense. It's funny. You can, if you peek around at different analysts, you can see like everyone's got a different favorite guy coming into the receiver room, and he's got a lot of fans of his coming into this year. So it's like all these freshmen coming in, him, Davion Chandler, and Miles Kendrick, all these guys can produce early. So I'm super excited for this class. But shout out to LeBron Bond, first team All-State, three positions. Hoosier.
With seven current scholarship Indiana receivers right now, all three freshmen coming in, including LeBron Bond, are looking to get snaps, especially LeBron Bond and Miles Kendrick. We currently don't have a starting slot receiver.
We don't have a traditional slot, but I think actually like a lot of what Surratt does really well and a lot of what Cooper does really well translates to the slot. So I'd be excited to see if we start moving guys around, especially if we're going to incorporate a healthy EJ Williams a little bit more on the outside, because that dude is really dynamic. And when he's on the field, he's a really, really good player. Super pumped to have him back. That's another move that's been flying under the radar for Hoosier fans, but that's a huge one, EJ Williams coming back. But yeah, we're kind of missing that like traditional slot, almost like a Julian Fleming.
Like a Mikey Matthews from Cal, or like a Zachariah Branch from USC. That
Zachariah Branch is going to Georgia, dude.
We're doing our portal wish list later, and on my list, I'm just going to steal it. It's a slot receiver. We need a starting slot guy. I think the depth that the freshmen bring in is huge, with Bond and Kendrick coming in, and Chandler's going to mix in with the outside guys, EJ and Coop and Surratt, and then Charlie Becker's probably going to get some more tick. Bring in one more slot guy, you have another good eight-man receiver rotation.
100%. And then, real quickly, before we get into all the nasty stuff that was going on this week from the national media, Indiana alum Taylor Kniff donated $75,000 to the NIL fund. He's an Airbnb mogul, I guess. I don't know. He's doing big things. But shout out to Taylor. That's big time. $75,000 to the NIL fund. Indiana's not going anywhere.
Hopefully more follow suit. Everyone saw the... And to your point earlier about people taking Indiana legitimate, everyone saw the NIL that we were able to post up and how it's above Oregon.
Oh my God. Dude, I had the dumbest person respond to me today and be like, yeah, okay, Oregon spent $10 million on their roster. And I'm like, you're a moron who can't read. And they're like, you're an idiot who can't read. And I'm like, no, you actually can't read, because that isn't saying how much money that they spent on NIL. That's saying how much money that their collective has. And that's more towards like grassroots fundraising that has nothing to do with Phil Knight and Nike and all the back end NIL deals, which is like, people don't understand what NIL is. And I've read the bylaws. Like, NIL is not payment directly from the university. That's going to be what this rev share is coming up. And there's some really interesting things happening. Mitt Winter, I believe is his name. He's a attorney online. I'll have to get the name of him. But he's been doing a lot of like NIL stuff leading up to this kind of like big boom, which is happening where they're going to rev share in the next couple months. And a lot of the money that these teams have to spend, they have to spend it. So he called it double dipping. And it's kind of hard for me to really explain exactly what's happening. But like that's how Duke was able to give Darian Mensah $8 million. It's because it's still the Wild Wild West. But he was also saying that, or somebody was saying that, the portal prices are going to come way down starting when this rev share starts. So it is super interesting. But yeah, there is a little bit of a disconnect I think people have between like what NIL is and then how teams are using it right now, because they're not many of them are doing it legally.
Yeah, it's the Wild Wild West right now. We're still waiting on checks and balances to come through. The point is Indiana is well suited to compete with the big dogs, and they will continue to do so. Just like they have. We'll see. You know, we'll trust. If there's one thing, you know, I have my gripes with Signetti. We'll get to him later. But there's one thing he does really well, and that's roster building and development. Well, development at this level, development at this level remains to be seen. But roster building is definitely his biggest strength as a coach. And he's already in a very good position. Just need a few starter holes to fill in. But the depth behind the starting jobs right now are full of either guys that have been on the roster for a while, or you know, the 38 freshmen that he's brought in the past two classes, none of which have transferred yet.
Well said. Do you want to have the Signetti conversation now? Because I do think it kind of segues nicely into what I want to talk about next.
No, because it goes into kind of the Notre Dame game. And I kind of wanted to talk about that when we talk about the Notre Dame.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, people are mad about Indiana, Brad. I don't know if you've seen, but I don't know what Kirk Herbstreit's problem is, and he did give a half-hearted apology and kind of buried the Indiana stuff on McAfee today, which, to be honest, I did kind of appreciate. Like, this shouldn't be a running thing. His comments about the game after the game shouldn't be a running thing, but he said them, and he pretty much lit the Indiana fan base on fire, and he's hearing about it. He wasn't the only one, though. Cowherd said something ridiculous about Indiana's schedule and not deserving to be there. The entire SEC tried to make a gripe about their conference being the best. We all saw what happened to Tennessee. Ryan Russillo tried his best to get in on the engagement. I don't know what he was trying to do there, or what angle he was trying to take, or what corner of the internet he's hanging out on. But I don't even want to talk about Russillo. But Herbstreit really is the one that was disappointing. You just expect better from that guy. Being in the position he is and having the power that he does, his opinion holds weight. And when he goes on national television and absolutely buries Indiana, regardless of what his personal opinions are about Kurt Signetti, it not only hurts the program, it hurts the kids. On top of everything, it just simply wasn't true.
Yeah.
Like, he said that Indiana got outclassed and didn't belong, and then doubled down on it standing in front of the Ohio State-Tennessee score, where Tennessee looked like a high school team.
To single out an individual school after we saw four blowouts in the first round is pretty unprofessional from them. People can point the argument of, you know, Indiana lost by 10. They didn't lose by 10. That was a 27-point loss, guys. Let's get used to it. 24-point loss, damn near. And
listen, but
he shouldn't be singling out as a national pundit as he is with so much weight. He shouldn't be doing those things. Leave that to the Ryan Russillos and the Colin Cowherds of the world. You are Kirk Herbstreit. You call games. You cannot be showing this type of bias about a single school. You know, your own personal opinion about a school, because that's just not what you do. You are supposed to preview the games and then you call the games. Yes, you can give some good analysis about what happened in the game, but to single out a school that played yesterday when he was saying these things is completely unprofessional on his part. And he's losing a lot of credibility by doing it. And I think a lot of people are calling him out on it, and that's why he had to go on Pat McAfee to put out the fire a little bit.
Well, 100%. And to be honest, I don't even want to say anything else, because I feel like you just made a phenomenal point there. Like, his job is to be to not give his opinion. His job is to call the game how he sees it, and to you're right, to single out Indiana to the point where it felt like it was an attack from the network, it really felt like the establishment is threatened by what Indiana's building here. Because if you think about it, there isn't that much room at the top. There's only 12 teams. You saw what happened. Like, three SEC teams got in. You had Alabama left out. You had, like, think about the giant brands that didn't make it. That affects the bottom line. And when you start playing with people's money, they get threatened. And Indiana has the ability, whether the people want to believe it or not, Indiana has the ability to push into that upper echelon of football because of the alumni base and the money. They just needed somebody who had the ability to take them there. And I know people are going to say what they're going to say about Cignetti, but so far he's proven he's been the guy to elevate this program. So much so to the point where they were one of the best 12 teams in the country, and it doesn't look like they're taking a step back. So, to your point, to inject that level of opinion into it and to do it in a position where not only could Indiana not punch back, but it was a pile-on. It was completely unprofessional. It was uncalled for, and it was, you're right, it's killing his credibility, and it was just flat out not true.
Yeah, let's say all three games on Saturday were really close, good games. Then maybe what he said is fine because they were the only team to get blown out in the first round. The fact of the matter is that didn't happen. Indiana actually had the smallest margin of loss of any of the four teams that lost on in the first round. That's a fact. So to single them out and say they don't belong, while not including SMU, Tennessee, and Clemson, who is an auto bid, so we can't really say that about Clemson, but to not single out SMU and Tennessee while making that statement is just, it's just not true. It just makes him seem like he doesn't know what he's talking about.
100%. And here's what it looks like. It looks like you have a bunch of people who have a hand in making money off the SEC, looking at Indiana and what Cignetti did, going, oh shit, if this guy goes any higher, like, that's going to lock another one of us out. And it's, how do we put this fire out as quickly as humanly possible? Discredit, 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 discredit. And it came from all angles. And guess what? It's going to continue to come. Somebody put out a phenomenal Fred Glass quote from a couple years ago where he said, there's people in powerful places that don't want Indiana football to be good. We're just a win on their schedule and they get to move on. They get to collect their paycheck from coming to our stadium and that's it. And if that changes, the bottom line for a lot of people changes. And that's real. And so it's not just a coincidence that 15 talking heads came out trying to bury Indiana and the general public went, wait a second. How come we all watched one thing and you're telling us what we watched wasn't what we saw? That's just straight up gaslighting.
Yeah, and adding on to that point, like, how people are somewhat scared of Indiana. Any ball knower knows, if you follow college football, you know about the 1 to 2 year jump. That's the jump that you make after a first year head coach, and then you have a full off season, your first full 100% full off season where you have everything in control, you have all your guys, and you're able to assemble a team for year two, and you look at what happens. Exhibit A, Kenny Dillingham, this year, Arizona State, year two. They were picked to finish second to last in the Big 12, and they came out and played Kenny Dillingham ball all the way to a first-round bye in the playoff. Teams are scared of that. Imagine what's going to happen to an 11-2 team that lost to Notre Dame and Ohio State going from year one to year two.
With a lot of guys.
Yeah, I have a lot of doubts about this roster, but I'm not doubting Cignetti and his ability to roster build. You fill in those holes that we're going to talk about later in the portal, we'll be right back in the playoff next year. And that scares a lot of teams.
And it's funny, I was having this conversation earlier where I was like, it's not that... It was actually funny, and I didn't want to bring this tool shed up, but it was right after I saw the Russillo clip, and it's Indiana fans are not looking for sympathy. Indiana fans are looking for respect. They want people to acknowledge what happened on the field this season is real, and the reality of the situation is, because of the way they performed against Ohio State and Notre Dame, for right or for wrong, they're not going to get that respect from the general public this year. Guess what? That sucks, but that's okay. It's going to mean that they're going to go into the off season with a huge chip on their shoulder. People need to not mistake sympathy and respect, because what is happening to Indiana at a national level is straight up disrespectful. to their resume, to the way they played, to the way they blew out teams, to the character and quality of the kids on that team. Like, it is straight up disrespectful to the guys in that room, the way the national media has treated Indiana. And that's the only thing that the fans are fighting for, is the respect that this team deserves.
100%. I don't think any Indiana fan was chirping. Like, obviously, we're rooting for our team to win a national title. Yes. And we were talking a lot of smack. And we lost. And we deserve all the, you know, Notre Dame fans start chirping at us. Sure, SEC fans can get in on the fight, too. That's all fun and games. But back to the respect thing. Like, it's not like we were trying to say we're here to overtake college football year one. That was never the idea of winning a national title with a year one head coach. Is basically impossible. Basically. The fact that they made it this far deserves respect, and they're just not getting it. And just because of a logo that they have, people are just assuming that this is a one-year fluke. And that's just not the case. And they're going to see it next year when another 10-win team from Cignetti comes around. They're on the playoff bubble again next year. I mean, the same thing 100%. As last year.
And that team's going to be anchored by the heart and soul of the Hoosier defense, because Aiden Fisher, all Big Ten, all American, all Hoosier, is coming back for his senior season.
Yeah, I expect most of the – I wasn't quite done with my rant. I didn't get to rant.
No, go ahead. Continue. I just got excited.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, and they'll be back next year, and they got Fisher back. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I keep hearing a few things from the public that I need to address. The idea that I want better games in the playoff. I hear that a lot. First off, I don't think putting a 9-3 SEC team or even eliminating auto buys would have changed the fact that we had four blowouts in the first round. If we got rid of the auto buys, I'm not going to play the hypothetical game with the 9-3 teams, because those teams lost to Kentucky, Oklahoma. I know they would get pummeled by Ohio State, Notre Dame, yada, 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 Penn State, name it. Eliminating the auto buys would have made up a matchup of, it would have been Notre Dame over Clemson. I'm calling a blowout there at Notre Dame. I was there at that game. That was an electric atmosphere. Notre Dame's very good too. And then it would have been Arizona State versus, I'm going off the dome here, it would have been Arizona State going to Penn State. No, Ohio State. They would have gotten pummeled. Then it would have been SMU going to Tennessee.
That probably would have been a good game.
Maybe would have been a good game. I don't know. Like, these blowouts, we're playing hypotheticals here, but like, And then Boise State has to go to Indiana. Like,
forgot we were playing hypotheticals. Like, this isn't even a question. Like, Texas and Georgia, Tennessee, auto wins.
Yeah, like,
hypothetical. What are we even talking
Tennessee's
about?
Never lost a hypothetical game. They're blowing out SMU.
The SEC is undefeated in hypotheticals.
And this is why we didn't have... This is why we didn't have a playoff in the first place. Because the difference between 1-6 and 7-25 is so astronomical that, you know, this is why we've had blowouts. We have blowouts in the CFP. Even the difference between 2-4, we get blowouts in the four-team playoff.
What was Georgia Florida State last year? 5-6?
5-6. But, you know, it was transfer portal. It was the transfer portal game. Like, I'm not even going to count that one. But, like, that's why we had bowl games in the first place, was to, you know, have these even matchups. And then you have 1-2, who would have been Georgia and Oregon this year, playing the national title game. And whoever wins that game is the national champion. And everyone else is playing a sick-ass bowl game. It's a shame that, you know, all these people saying, oh, we want a 12-team playoff and we want better games. Like, that's just not going to happen. That's just not...
It contradicts each other.
Yeah, exactly.
It tells me people have never watched, like, the Division II championships, the FCS championships. Like, all those round one high seed games are slaughters. Every single one of them.
Even down to the semis and the championship games, North Dakota State would pummel teams all the way to a national title. All the time. And that kind of goes into the aspect of, like, I mentioned, you know, 7-25 is pretty the difference between 1-6 and 7-25 is pretty astronomical. Like going down from 10-25, it's pretty much a crapshoot, which is why it kind of goes into that discernment of like, yeah, best versus most deserving. Like at that point, like 10-25, like I don't know who the best team is. So at that point, you have to go most deserving. Like in what other sport are you putting in the best team over the most deserving team? I'll give you a hint. It's zero sports. Zero sports.
Zero, literally, zero it doesn't sports. Happen.
It's not a real thing. So the idea of playing these hypotheticals.
What was the Herb Street quote?
Yes, Ole Miss, Bama, South Carolina, in theory, could beat Indiana on paper. We'll never know because they lost games that they shouldn't have lost to, and that knocked them out of the playoff. That's their fault. It would have been a much more difficult argument for SMU and Indiana if you have 10-2 Alabama there and 10-2 Ole Miss and 10-2 South Carolina. It would have been a much better discussion. This year is very, very clean cut for a 12-team. So the fact that there's this much argument over everything is ludicrous to me. Because it was the most clear-cut, you know, field that we're probably ever going to have in a 12-team field. Probably. We'll see how things work out in the future. But, yeah, most deserving and basically also equals best at that point because 10 through 25 is basically the same team. And then your 1 through 6, which, by the way, all got into the next round. So you got your wish. The six best teams in college football are still playing for a national title. So at the end of the day, the goal of the committee did their job. Because in theory, let's say one of those six, I'm talking Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State, and Georgia. Those are the six I'm alluding to. Let's say one of those teams lost in the first round. Then that team that beat them is now considered one of the best teams in college football because they won that big game. Oh, see how that works? See, now you put the most deserving team to get that shot at the top six. And will they or will they not get it done? One day they're going to get it done. It's going to be absolutely electric. But this year just wasn't it. You know, they lost in the first round. The top teams took care of business like they normally do and should do. Unlike, you know, an Alabama, South Carolina, or a Ole Miss. They weren't able to do that this year against far inferior teams to Indiana, SMU, Clemson. Like, the idea that they think they have an argument for the playoff is just absolutely ludicrous. And that's why, you know, they nailed the field. It's correct, and we're set up for a very good playoff. I do think they should get rid of auto buys. I think they should seed it by how they're ranked. I've said this before. I think that's the only change I'd make. I think they nailed the field. They nailed, you know, the first round games. Like I thought, you know, I watched every single one. It's not going to change next year. I'm a college football fan. I know most of them are going to be blowouts. They were all blowouts. I'm going to watch anyways because I love college football. And if you don't think that way, then I don't know what to tell you. You're either biased or you don't actually like college football.
Yeah, we're learning a lot of people don't actually love ball. They just like to complain.
They just like to see the flashy matchups of Ole Miss, and even though Ole Miss isn't that good, they went 9-3. Like, they want to see Bama in the playoff. The only argument I would make
I got news for the people who want to see those flashy matchups of like the Bamas and the Ole Misses and the South Carolinas and the. It's called the SEC. Go fucking watch the regular season. You would have seen those teams weren't good enough.
Drops Mike. I love that. Yeah, that's the end of my rant. Because I kind of ran into that.
I was about to say, I'm glad you went back to that because I did kind of forget you wanted to do that, and I believe that was necessary.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I feel like I said that very concisely and very like.
Yeah, I thought it was very well said. And you're right. This was the most obvious 12-team field. And also, it would have been a hell of an argument if SMU was able to beat Clemson.
Yeah.
And then you don't have Clemson getting in. And then all of a sudden, South Carolina or Bama or like one of those teams sneaks in.
Yeah. And that would be fun. I'd be so about that. Like, as a football, I'm like, oh.
Guess what? None of us would have fucking cared.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been all mad because, you know, okay, based on how the field goes. Yeah, a three-loss SEC team gets in this year because the SEC is a very good conference. They're very deep this year. They only have three teams in the field right now. Big Ten has four, so I don't know. I think all three of those teams have a better argument than Illinois. And, yeah, they should be fighting for that last bid, but it just didn't open up for him this year. And I think they're just a little salty about it. It happens.
100%. But guess what? We don't care because Aiden Fisher's coming back, and we're gonna be sick again next year.
Yeah, Aiden Fisher, number four, team captain and All-American, is back. This basically sets up Indiana to return their three best players on defense at all, each of their best player at each three levels. Kamara, Fisher, Pons.
Kamara is not confirmed yet, but we do have the Mikhail Kamara tweet notifications on.
I am anticipating every non-senior to return to this team. If not, it's a backup that is going to the portal. And there's a few of those there that are older guys, might not start next year, probably should go. And Sig's going to have conversations with all of his scholarship guys. Going to, you know, feel them out, where they're at, what they're thinking. What he's going to tell them what their forecast looks like for next year, what he's expecting of them. And yeah, we haven't heard too much noise coming of players leaving. We only had Taven, which was pretty writing on the wall for everyone that follows Indiana football. I would have liked to keep him for the depth, but go try to find your starting job. You know, go for it. Go to Ball 100%. State. Go to Ball State and ball out. Like, go do that. That's fine.
I love Taven Jackson, and I'm so glad that. The style, like, I appreciate our fan base so much, Brad, because the style of tweet that was going around after Taven hit the portal, it was like every single person was saying, this guy didn't have to stay for the portal season. We saw multiple quarterbacks leave their team. This guy had every excuse to transfer after last season. He had more than enough excuses to be a problem this year, and he was a model teammate, awesome dude, like, won us our first appearance on College Game Day. You can't say enough good things about Taven Jackson, and the entire Hoosier fan base is behind this guy. Wherever he goes next, we want him to be successful, and we'll be rooting for him.
Whatever school gets him is getting a very good kid that they're going to really appreciate. And, yeah, he can play ball a little bit too.
Yeah, the kid can play. The kid can play. But I do think the writing was on the wall, and I do think this is a good time to jump into the Notre Dame game because – I don't want to go too far ahead, but with the way Rourke was playing, especially by the end of the third quarter, early fourth quarter, the fact that they didn't go to Taven in that situation kind of that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing from the Notre Dame game is that we're just not there yet. Not there yet. We already said at the beginning of the show, like, we love this team, got tons of dogs in this team. Maybe not, you know, depth-wise yet. But starting guys, very good players. Are we at the level in terms of roster to where we can, you know, go on the road to Notre Dame and beat them? No, we're just not there yet, year one. We're just not. And that's a tough pill to swallow because we love these guys and they really did set the groundwork of what's to come. But the reality is, and I think a lot of those guys know, is that the plan for Indiana is to backfill them with better players.
Well, listen.
It seems a little harsh of me to just call them better because I'm not calling them not good. I'm just talking like the elite, like the NFL draft picks. Our plan is to have rosters with 10 draft NFL draft picks.
At the end of the day, Brad, this is a sport. We love the people, the human beings that were the players on this team. At the same time, it's more than fair that we have a very real conversation about where the program stands and what happened on the field on Friday night. And yes, the final score was only 10, but like we all watched the game. Like, Indiana got pushed around on offense. Notre Dame was playing press man the entire time. There was nowhere to go with the ball. Until Riley Mills suffered that season-ending injury, which is going to be like that's a devastating injury for Notre Dame because that dude was by far the best player on the field when those like two units were out there. But Indiana literally could do nothing on offense the entire game. Defensively, I thought they battled really well, but at the same time, they don't have an athlete like Jeremiah Love, and that was another huge difference in the game. But it's just if you looked at the way the two, if you just took a still shot of the way the two defenses were playing pre-snap. It told you everything you needed to know. Notre Dame was not afraid of being beat over the top. Notre Dame was not afraid of being out-athleted. Notre Dame was not afraid of leaving. Like, they left an open box the entire game and dared Indiana to run the ball. And every time Rourke handed it off with a numbers advantage, they got stuffed. Like, the reality of the situation is that Notre Dame is just a level above Indiana. And while, yes, we talked a lot of shit going into the game because it's fun, and that's what you do when you're playing a game, when you see what happened and your eyes tell you something, like, you're to sit here and say, like, Indiana didn't get pushed around in that game would just destroy our credibility. Like, they did.
Yeah, I'm not going to pull a Kirk Herbstreit and just pull false narratives out of my ass. This is, yeah, it was an ass whoop is what it was. And we showed a lot of fight making it a game. There's a point there where I was sitting there and it's like, we scored that second touchdown. And I'm like, if we get this 2-point conversion and Ratchet gets another, like, by the way, Notre Dame Stadium is dead silent at this point. You could hear a pin drop. And I'm just thinking,
yeah, Indiana got an onside kick in this game. Nobody's even talking about that. That was an insane onside kick from Radicic. And then the second one, you could argue, was even better.
They almost got the second one, too. So if they just converted on that 2-point conversion, all of a sudden you're looking at what could have been
a one-score
game. One of the craziest comebacks in sports history. But, like, at the level of, like, Red Sox coming back down 3-0 to the Yankees in the ALCS, 2-0-4 ALCS, like, that, it'd be that level of comeback. Because those first 57,
those first
57 minutes, Indiana was just not at the same level. And that's a lot of what prompted Kirk to say those things, sure. But that was also SMU. That was also Clemson. Like, Tennessee's yes. far away, too. Like, Tennessee's not close.
I think people were mistaken, too. And the problem with the discourse after the game was not the fact that Indiana thought their team played really well and they were in it and that they just got unlucky. The problem became that everyone immediately tried to discredit the season, the coach, the players, and everything that had happened in the last 3 months because they got outplayed by a better team on the road.
Which happened to everyone else.
Which happened to every other team that played. And when you take the crown jewel of the weekend, Ohio State and Tennessee, and I fucking hate doing this, comparing two teams that lost that played the same opponent. But just look, like, Ohio State reached 35 points on Indiana by faking a knee on the goal line and diving in the end zone, and then their quarterback ran off the field and stuffed a cigarette on the ground.
Yeah, if there's one thing,
like, this was a much different, Ohio State's threes and fours were on the field with 12 minutes to go in the game. Like, I think it was Buffed in Prime T-Cal that tweeted this. And side note here, and one of my favorite parts about this season was learning about that whole, like, Buffed in Prime and the way they go over film and how they break down the unheralded guys. And that's, if you haven't seen the Buffed in Prime YouTube channel, go check those guys out. They do awesome work over there. But he was like, Ohio State's got early enrollees on the field right now. Like, what are we even talking about? Like, it was insane. Like, to make believe that Indiana wasn't a competitive football team is crazy, especially with the way the defense played, especially in the second half. And even, again, I hate doing this one too, take away the one explosive play and look, they didn't do anything. But no, I'm saying leave that play in there and look at the rest of the game. Like, Indiana was really stout against the run, and they forced Riley Leonard to make a bunch of throws. And guess what? Riley Leonard was better than we both thought he was going to be.
It's very apparent that our defense is very good. And they're like, if there's a part of our team that's, like, close to where it needs to be, it's our defense. Where we're lacking is on the offensive side of the ball. O-line getting pushed around. They played great all year in a Big Ten schedule. When it comes up to the elite D-line in the country, they're not even close. And
it does hurt that they lost Evans.
And Rourke's inability to improvise was getting, you know, exposed, because he didn't have it. When Rourke doesn't have his first two or three reads, he's pretty ineffective throughout the whole year. And that's why I was never.
Well, I'm going to be honest, Brad.
I was never bullish on his first round grade.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's more than fair. I'll full blown put my hand up and say I got a little ahead of myself there. And, like, I love Curtis Rourke, but he was, like, he didn't have a good game. And I think he'd be the first person to tell you that. And I don't know if you saw the picture of his thumb today on Twitter. He posted his thank you to Hoosier Nation. But, like, holy shit, that thing looked grotesque.
Yeah, I don't think he was 100%.
The fact that he was just playing through that, there's no way he was 100%. It was like, you're looking at the way he throws the ball, and you're like, why is everything high? And it's like, oh, he can't grip the ball.
He doesn't have a thumbnail. He doesn't have one.
And it's like, that almost kind of reminds me of when Tuttle destroyed his shoulder at halftime of the Outback Bowl, and they just rolled him out there for the second half because Dexter Williams didn't know the playbook.
I love that story so much. Yeah, but it does come to the back to the point, like, why didn't we put in Taven?
Exactly. So that was kind of
the
point.
I think there's also something to be said about, like, you got to let Rourke finish this out. You got to let Rourke.
No,
he got us there.
I think if
he got us there.
If you have any belief, and this isn't, I want to be careful saying this because it's going to sound like I'm putting Taven Jackson down, and I'm not. But if you're the coaching staff and you have any belief that he's your starting quarterback next year, he comes into that game to provide a spark. But if you don't think he's your guy, then you roll with the guy who's not playing well and hope he figures it out. Because at that point in the game, there was nothing that Indiana's offense was showing you that showed they could get a first down, let alone score a touchdown. And I think, and I'm going to get jumped on for this point too, and I know, like, first of all, and let's have the Cignetti conversation right now, because somebody's pregame comments should not dictate the way they coach a football game. The persona you put out and the way you talk to your fan base and the opposing fans and the way you actually strategically manage a football game should not match up. So all the people out there who were so pissed off that Sig talked all that shit and then punted on 4th and 10 in his own zone when his offense hadn't done a single thing in an hour and a half. Like, I'm sorry, but that was the right football play. And guess what? Even though Notre Dame came down the field and scored, that ended up sparking Indiana's offense, and they started to, quote-unquote, get going after that. Like, what do people think? That they were just going to, like, okay, fourth and 10 from our own 30, and we're getting ran out of this game. Like, you know what? Let's just pull out the 4th and 10 play we've been sitting on all day and magically get this first down. It's like, if you think Indiana could have gained 10 yards, they would have done it? Like, what kind of – it's asinine. So to be like, oh, he talked shit and then he punted. Like, yeah, sorry. It was the right decision. And no, it wasn't aggressive. But guess what? They weren't winning the football game if they gave up on 4th down there anyway. So, like, to me, that's just, you're looking for a reason to dislike the guy. You're looking for a reason to jump on him because you don't like his attitude. And that's fine. But in terms of it being the wrong coaching decision, like, you just weren't watching the game, because Indiana's defensive unit was outplaying the offense by far, and it was the only positive in the game, and it was the only reason we even stuck around, and that didn't become a blowout. Because guess what? If Notre Dame could have put up 45 goddamn points like Ohio State did and had that narrative coming out of this game, guess what? They would have.
I liked your point. I'm glad you brought this up, because I am one of those Kurt Cignetti critics about how he handled this game. Punting on 4th down, down 17, with 10 minutes left in the game, you're on the opponent's 40-yard line. All year, Kurt Cignetti has been very aggressive. Fake punts, up 30. Going for it on 4th down.
Yeah, but they're not dumb decisions, though. They're aggressive decisions, but they're smart aggressive decisions. They're not just aggressive decisions to make them.
Understood. And I think that's a very valid point, and I almost feel like I'm losing this argument. But I would have gone for it. You gotta show some fight.
No, listen,
you gotta show some fight. You got them punting was clear to me that even the coaching staff knew that they were outmatched, out talented, all across the board, and that's why they could. And to your point, that's why they couldn't go for fourth and 10.
Would you feel differently if the coaching staff was like, no, we actually were like, we should have won that game? Like, if they were just like completely delusional and were like, nope, we our guys, their guys, let's line up and play man the whole game. Like, what do you? Like, that's crazy. Like, anybody who loves football and watches and consumes and takes in as much football as these guys do, understood what they were up against. Like, that's why. And I know people you're upset about Cignetti going on game day. And I thought Shane Gillis's joke about it was hilarious. And the fact is, like, Sig was on here on game day. Like, what are we even talking about? Irish. But, like, guess what, where everybody's anger and attention and all of that negativity is going towards after this game? It's going towards Kurt Cignetti. Guess where it's not going? Curtis Rourke.
Justice Allison. James Carpenter.
Like, you know, like the guys, the people who didn't play well, like the defender, I don't even remember who was playing outside corner when Jeremiah Love went nuts, but everybody said that was one guy who lost contain. Like, nobody's even, like, I haven't even heard Sharp's name be brought up, and I don't want to bring it up. That's not my point. My point is what Cignetti did, and knowing, me saying this is not saying Cignetti didn't believe in his team's ability to win, but I promise you he knew he was up against the talent gap. Like, he's not a moron. He watches more football than we do. I promise
he's a master roster builder. He's one of the best talent evaluators at the college level right now.
That his move to go on game day was calculated. I promise that. It wasn't, it was like a me thing, but it was for a reason. And I believe the reason was he knew they were going to get run out of the building, and he didn't want the negativity to go on his team. He wanted it to go on him.
Yeah, those are very good points. And I completely agree with how, you know, your rebuttals to both. I wish we would have set it up a little bit better, like on the pod. Like, I make the points that a lot of people are making, including myself. And then you made the even better points of, you know, basically Kurt Cignetti's not an idiot, and it was all calculated. I do think I disagree with punting there in opponent's territory. If I was coaching the game. Just that's what I would have done. But as a fan, I was also pissed that he went on game day, not in the locker room. I do think you make a very good point that might have been calculated to put all the pressure on him. So, like, whenever he wins, it's all about the players. And whenever he loses, it's all about him. That's what it should be about. And that's a good coach. And I hope that's the message. And I hope that, because I feel like a lot of this rah-rah stuff makes it seem like he's a me guy. And I hope that's the message he's giving to players, that I'm going to put all the attention on me. You guys can just go out and ball out like you normally do.
Here's what tells me I'm on the right track here. It's exactly the point you made earlier. He's brought in how many freshmen to this team across two classes? Nobody's left. How many guys were leaving? You know, like, you listen to the way his team talks about him. His coaches have all been with him for 10 years. Like, you don't hang around a guy who just sells you out.
Yeah. And if you don't like, and I think you made this point to me, like, when we were talking about after the game, because we've been trying to record this podcast for a little bit now. But a really good point you made is that, fuck, I just blanked on it. I'm so pissed right now.
Talking about Sig in the game?
No, it was like, fuck.
It'll come back to you. It'll come back to you.
It won't. I had it. So pissed.
Do you remember what it was along the lines of?
Well, what were we just talking about?
We're talking about Cignetti taking the pressure off his team and putting it on himself, so when they lose, people get mad at him, but when they win, he can put it on his team. And then you look at the guys who are coming in, nobody's leaving his team. You look at his coaches, nobody's leaving. Like, I don't know. It's the only people who dislike him are the people who he's trying to upset.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not coming back to me. Fuck.
Yeah, I had a problem with the game day thing, though. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I was thrilled to see him on game day, especially after the performance they put up. But at the same time, like, that's kind of his MO. That's his persona. He is building a brand here, and he is part of that brand. And guess what? The Indiana fans fucking loved it. And that's all that matters.
Here's the point I was going to make. If a recruit sees Cignetti being a rah-rah guy on television, doing the character bit, they're probably not going to like him in practice anyways. So it's probably for the best.
Yeah, if you see this and it turns you off immediately, you're not the type of guy who's going to be brought in here anyway. like, not, it's, recruiting is a two-way street. Like, you got to want to be here, and, like, we got to want you. But it's, like, we're looking for a specific type of person. Like, there are kids out there that got fired up about Indiana. There are kids out there that we're talking to that are hearing, look at how close we were, and we think you are going to be somebody who helps take us over the edge. Like, we talked about this before the pod, but it, and we were talking about Fernando Mendoza. But if you're Fernando Mendoza and, like, you go to Georgia, right? You're just the next great Georgia quarterback, right? But if you go to Indiana,
top five Indiana,
you're a legend.
Top five Indiana quarterback all time as soon as he steps on campus.
You're a legend before you even take a snap. You have the chance to like create a whole new legacy for a fan base and establish a tradition. And like, if you're somebody who's chasing something like glory, this is the spot.
Yeah, I don't want to name comparisons, but I like going back to, so I like comparing this rebuild to the Saban rebuild. They go 6-6 year one. They bring in, they already have Greg McElroy on the staff. You could be the AJ McCarron of this team. You could be the Blake Sims, the and then later 7 years down the line, they get Tua, they get Jalen Hurts, they get Mac Jones. Like, you could be the facilitator. You could be the AJ McCarron, the Greg McElroy that transcends Indiana into the world where they're able to get the Tuas and the Jalen Hurtses and the Mac Joneses to go play quarterback at your school. And that's the reason why Greg McElroy is on ESPN right now. I think that's important. Like, he's a legend. He's a fucking legend. He brought Bama back.
Yeah. So to put a bow on Indiana Notre Dame, first of all, shout out to the crowd. There were, I don't know what, actually, you were there. Tell me about South Bend.
South Bend is, it's a college football holy land. You feel it. The tailgate field's packed. Packed, dude. Nowhere to move. It's insane. It's in a parking lot. It's electric. Never seen anything like it. Like, I've been to USC tailgates, UCLA tailgates, Indiana tailgates. I could probably do a lot more traveling in college football for how much I love it. I plan on going to more road games, thinking about going to Eugene next year. You can just feel it as soon as, like, I talked all this smack going into the game. I felt it in the tailgating fields and all the buzz, and Notre Dame is life there. It is a different level, and it's only going to get better with time at Indiana. It's a great first year for our fan base, but we have work to do on our end. And you felt it going into the stadium. It's only 77,000. Bowl, not as big as the Rose Bowl. Like, I've seen the Rose Bowl packed for UCLA games. There was a good amount of red there, but man, dude, that, it was not an Indiana takeover by any means. I would say 5-10% Hoosier fans. That might be a little, I couldn't really see my side, 100%. But
and I think I do believe a lot of Hoosier fans are going to feel this way. Maybe not the ones who immediately are going to battle those, like the reverse jacket crowd that's going to get frustrated. But if you're not playing against Notre Dame, like, if we're not, like, I'll use Riley Leonard as a perfect example. Like, trying to figure out ways to root against him is really hard. Like, he's a really good kid, like, does really good stuff, has a positive attitude, great teammate. Like, it's hard to root against that guy. Like, Notre Dame's got a lot of kids like that. And then when you look at Notre Dame, the brand, like, that's a football team. Like, you went over the history.
I understood firsthand about what Notre Dame football is. And it is,
yeah, like, there's, like, we have to remember, for as awesome as this football season is, like, this is, like, I made the joke a couple times, but, like, it really is a completely new era here. Like, this is before times were BC. We're in AD times. Like, this is year one. The level of tradition and the history that a school like Notre Dame has
extends, it's like 100 years,
extends a century. Like, we're centuries behind. So you, on the football field, you can catch up, but, like, truth of the matter is, like, tradition and history wise, like, you can never get there unless Notre Dame just stops playing football.
That's real. And Yeah, the environment was insane. The stadium's really cool. They have great atmosphere. They get the people going. They do the push-ups whenever Notre Dame scores a touchdown. They're doing it all around me and Wiley. It was pretty crazy. And yeah, it was pretty unique to see something like that. And yeah, I'm cheering for Notre Dame to go all the way this year. I think it'd be really cool. Especially with the whole
Well,
Brian
yeah,
Kelly thing going on.
100%. Yeah, that's Freeman won a playoff game before him, but yeah, it's and I know Notre Dame's gonna have the whole like fuck Indiana thing and like F Kurt Cignetti and all
I was
that
getting a
stuff,
lot
but
of
it's like
go
yeah,
Hoosiers from the
we
Notre Dame
don't,
crowd. They're all reverse
yeah, it's
jackets.
like
They,
yes.
yeah, they, I got we got Chattanooga tomorrow from Notre Dame tailgate as I was passing by. Like, dear God, that Chattanooga game was awful too. It's like that was a tough double whammy to watch
But
that
no, it's
game
like
after. But
I don't have any gripe. I don't have any gripes with Notre Dame. Like they were on the schedule, so
we were
they were
bashing
on
them.
the board for this
Gotta
week, and
bash
they're
them.
off the schedule. So they're yeah, it's
Yeah.
what are we supposed to do? We're playing you in a football
Yeah,
game.
if we had better talent, it would have been a great matchup for us, but we're just not there yet. And
That's why I'm cannot wait for 2030. I have receipts.
I cannot wait for 2030. Cannot wait. That's what I was saying as I was leaving, like we were exiting the stadium, I was, embraces me, we're both upset, parlay pundit. I just exposed him for who he is.
I'll beep it.
Yeah, we gotta beat that. Yeah, parlay pundit. We're both feeling it after the game, and I think it was pretty unspoken. I was just like, yeah, well, we're gonna be here. We're gonna be at this level. It wasn't this year, but we're gonna get here. And that's what I was saying. People were chirping. I was just like, wait till we get our 4 and 5 stars coming in. Just wait. Just wait. Just
Yeah,
give
it's
us
like
a few years. Give us a few years. And like we've had this discussion before, like how long is it going to take for us to get there? You're thinking 2 to 3. I'm thinking more 4 to 5. I'm being a little realistic here. It could take even longer. Does that mean we won't be going to the playoff for another 4 or 5 years? No. No. I'm talking going to the semifinal. That's like once you make it to the semifinal, you make it to the final four in college football, you made it. Like from there, it's just. Yeah, obviously you want to win the national title, and that is the ultimate goal. But you get to the Final Four, all of a sudden you're clicking on all cylinders. You're a football powerhouse at that point. And we'll get there one day.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people want to take the opportunity to dunk on Indiana and be like,
As
yep,
they
this was
should.
cool, have fun, flash in the pan, and we'll never see you again. And yeah, cool, have your fun now. And like, there really isn't anything Hoosier fans can say back to that, because the only thing that can prove who's going to be right or wrong is time.
Is next year. Will we be 6-6 or are we going to go 9-3, 10-2 again? 11-1.
A lot of that's going to depend on the portal, which we'll get to in a little bit. But there were a couple other college football games this weekend. You wouldn't have known that based on the national media discourse, but three other semifinal or first round games happened, and they were all blowouts.
Yeah, for the first time ever, the CFP expanded to 12 teams. But first, you can get your own piece of that history from Nyko Sports. That's how do you spell it? NIKCO, Nyko Sports. For $119.95, get your limited edition football of only 5,000 featuring your Indiana Hoosiers to commemorate our first of many college football playoff appearances. That features every school with a shot to win the title this year. All 12 teams. Each ball is fully licensed by the NCAA and member schools and embossed for the highest quality to add to your collection. Use the code SIGS at checkout for $10 off your purchase. That's SIGS, SIGS. To order, learn more, call 1-800-345-2868. That's 1-800-345-2868. Or visit nikosports.com. That's NIKCO sports.com. Your code for discount is SIGS, 10% off.
Shout out to Nyko
I
Sports.
hate that
Yeah,
ad
I
read.
know everybody. Why?
It's just so long.
Nah.
It's a cool
No,
football. They sent me one.
no, the football is awesome.
They sent me one. It's
And
really nice. I have it in my office. It's a nice piece. Need to find a stand for it though, which is the thing. But yeah, it's a nice piece of decoration.
Yeah, but no matter what anybody in the media says, they can never take what's on that football away from us. So grab yours today, NycoSports.com.
Yeah, so let's go down the slate. We had opening game of Saturday was SMU at Penn State. And we had differing opinions here. I thought SMU would have a chance to make some noise offensively. I did not think they'd be able to stop Penn State by any means on offense. Boy, was I wrong. It was kind of the reverse.
This is the Tom Allen special.
Jennings, who is still a contender for me to throw some money on for Heisman next year. So he's going to make a jump. He's going to get better. Throws two pick sixes right off the bat. They're down 14-0. It's an actual nightmare. For SMU, I thought a 98-yard TD run for the first score of the game was a nightmare. No. Two pick sixes in the first quarter is a nightmare, and it's very hard to come back from. I thought it would be back and forth. SMU would be able to get something going on offense. Never happened. Penn State wins the first ever playoff game without a passing touchdown. They didn't even need Drew Aller in that game, and they won.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, Brad. I nailed this one.
Mm-hmm. You did.
And I especially nailed that crowd was raucous. Oh. And I obviously wasn't at any of the games, so like I wouldn't be the best person. But at least on TV, it felt like that was the most, like the craziest atmosphere to play in. Like that crowd was menacing. It felt like there was a wall of noise in front of Jennings the entire
game.
Yeah,
I can see why he threw those. You saw those pick sixes. They were bad. They were bad throws.
Yeah, they weren't
and
good.
And he was rattled. And yeah, just a learning experience for a team that's in a similar situation than us. I think we're ahead of schedule than SMU is right now, given that's our year one and Rhett Lashley's been there a couple years now. They're coming. Dallas money. SMU has the money. They're a small school, but a lot of money. They're going to stick around. But yeah, another team's just kind of building, waiting to get there. They'll be back in the playoff one day. Will they be back next year? Maybe with Jennings. Go back and win the ACC again or win the ACC for the first time. We'll see. But that's another team that's building on the come up. Yeah, Penn State. Like I said, in that top six field of the clear top six, it showed. It fucking showed. That big gap between six and the top six and the next six, it's very big.
Yeah, Penn State was just much better than them in all areas of the game. And then on top of that, they were at home.
Yeah, the home game's fun.
Hindsight.
Which is why they do need to kind of reseed it so that Penn State would have had a bye if they reseeded. That they seeded according to the rankings. So they wouldn't have even gotten that home game. They would just had a bye. They probably would have gotten, I don't know, the Fiesta Bowl or something like that.
There really isn't
SMU
not
just,
much to say about
yeah,
this
they,
game.
They turned the Mustangs into glue. Horses to glue was that game. And that was a glue factory. And it was just nothing they could do about it. Shout out Tom Allen.
Yeah, Tom Allen masterclass for the Penn State defense. They were disgusting.
Next game. Clemson went to Texas and showed a little bit of fight. Couldn't really stop them on offense. Final was 38-24. Yeah, Klubnik. Man, that dude can play. Holy smokes, man. Was he willing them into that game? Keeping them around.
Yeah, that was.
See, that's the difference. Like, Indiana has a guy like that against Notre Dame. With that defense that we already have, who knows what we could do in South Bend.
Yeah, the biggest takeaway from that game, obviously, besides Texas as a team just being really damn good, was how good Klubnik was. Like, that's just, like, you're 100% right. Like, having an absolute dude, a game changer, a top 12 guy at the position, it gives you the opportunity to hang around in these games you had no business hanging around in. The fact that that was a one-score game in the fourth quarter was crazy.
Yeah, insane. A lot of these, the whole, all three of these games have the same theme. It's like the top six versus the next six and what that gap looks like right now, at least this year. And, yeah, I don't know if South Carolina going to State College would have solved anything in this one. Or Texas also would have had a bye. Let's say they got to face Bama again. I don't think Bama has a shot. South Carolina doesn't have a shot. Ole Miss doesn't have a shot. It's, yeah, Texas is very good. We knew this all year. They are, of the six, one of the teams that hasn't played anyone. Texas, Clemson's probably their best win all year, but they won by two touchdowns at home. That's a solid win. And they got Arizona State next week, or on New Year's Day.
Yeah, it's if you're going to look at one of the games that would have strengthened the Herb Street argument, it was that one. Because Clemson, everybody's like, yep, that's the least deserving team, 100%. But they're also probably, recruiting-wise and star-wise and NFL talent-wise, the team that stacks up as well as those like upper echelon teams that we've talked about. That's a lot of the, like, it was a little frustrating that nobody, especially Herb Street, would have just come out and said, like, just take the NFL rosters and put them in because that's what people want to see. Like, if you want to see an NFL combine-esque, like, type of thing, again, go watch the SEC regular season. That's not what we're doing here.
Yeah, this is the college football playoff. We have to decide a winner.
Football playoff.
In order to do that, you have to have Clemson and SMU and Indiana play because they had fantastic years. Clemson, obviously, they won the ACC. And then, you know, put in the other two 10-win teams in the field. It's really that simple. It really is. And it's so frustrating that people say that. But then we go to the game to where I nailed it. I nailed it right on the head. I wish we clipped it, put it on Twitter. I said that Ohio State was going to boat race Tennessee. And boy, was I right. Oh, my God. Yes. Boat race. Didn't have a shot. Didn't even show up. Indiana at least scored on their first possession against Ohio State in Columbus. Tennessee scored toward the end of the first half. Touchdown?
Yeah. Poor Nico. He, like, early in the game on their first drive, I think cracked his helmet or something. That was kind of a precursor for what was to come. He was just getting his ass kicked all game. That, for as much talking as the SEC did in the 12 hours or 24 hours between the Indiana game and the Ohio State game, it got dead quiet because, yeah, Ohio State took them to the woodshed. There could have been 100,000 Tennessee fans there. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, but they're still undefeated in hypothetical games. So maybe they should replace Boise State in the next round because they haven't lost.
Should they just move on?
Yeah, they haven't lost.
Oh, they should move. You're right. They, Kirk Herbstreit likes their left end, so they should actually get into the national championship.
But yeah, it was a total ass whooping against, like I said, the top six against the next six. Big gap. Tennessee's far away from where they need to be in order to win a national title. Same with Indiana, same with SMU. Same with Clemson. Clemson's starting to add transfers now because they know that there's a gap.
Like, if you're going to power rank the teams that lost, like, Clemson got the closest. Indiana, while it wasn't that realistic, threatened a little bit. SMU and Tennessee just didn't belong.
They just rolled over.
And that is what should, like, that is what the weekend of football showed us. And that just wasn't the narrative coming out of the weekend, which is why it wasn't just Indiana fans that were going after Herb Street and the detractors, but it was pretty much anyone in college football that wasn't associated with the fan base that got left out.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad a lot of other fan bases had our back when that bullshit came out. I do appreciate that.
And Joel Klatt deserves a shout out as well.
Yeah, he's on our side. Like, these things happen. They get blown out. You know, there's a big gap, you know, in terms of quality of teams and when it comes to the top.
I thought Josh Pate made a great point about the college football playoff committee not being a production and it being like a competition committee, and that if the goal was to put on the best production, like, I don't think logical people would sit there and like, yeah, SMU is definitely going to give the best game to Penn State, but that's not what the point was.
Sports competition.
The point is
the sanctity of sport. We played, said this before.
We literally played an entire regular season, had thousands of people come together and rank these teams, and everyone came up with a list pretty much similar to that. And guess what? Every single list had Indiana in. So can we fucking stop?
It's ridiculous. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Are we going to preview the next games, or is that going to be a later pod? I think it's time for portal list.
It is time for portal.
It's Christmas time. It's Christmas time.
Yeah. The only
season of giving.
I was going to say the only thing
we're talking at the same time.
Let me transition here. I was going to say the only thing that's there, the most important next step that's going to help continue to change the way people view Indiana is this portal cycle. And it's a huge one. So go ahead.
Yeah, I have my list here. We're not on camera, but I have a paper that has basically every scholarship player. It's on one sheet of paper. Every scholarship player that we have, depth chart. And then on the side, I have my little college football wish list. Or transfer portal wish list. Christmas transfer portal list. Transfer portal Christmas list. Transfer portal Christmas list. That's the one. That's what I have here.
Yeah.
First on the list.
I have a transfer portal Christmas list too, Brad. Mine has one name on it.
Yeah, and I think it's the first name that I have on here. And that's quarterback. We need two of them. We need Fernando Mendoza is the name that I wrote down. It looks pretty likely. Would really appreciate a commitment in the next couple days because that would really get the balls rolling on other recruitments. Obviously, you got a quarterback. Players want to go play for that team that has a quarterback. It's very self-explanatory. But yeah, I think top of the list
makes sense.
Is finding a starter quarterback. There's not too many left right now. There's not. It's really Mendoza with Rubio off the market. It really comes down to us getting Fernando Mendoza or else we're in a real tough pickle. We're going to have to wait for a guy to come out of the portal to the portal. We might have to pay Quinn Ewers $4.5 million. It might get to that point.
The way the Mendoza, recruitment has, I don't know, it hasn't been explained to me, but I guess from what I've gathered from different parts of the internet, he's pretty, he likes Indiana. But I've also heard that if Georgia makes a late push, it would be tough. So we're seeing that late push from Georgia right now. ESP Zinn tweeted something like Sig versus Kirby for all the marbles. So we'll see. Like, this is a huge test. And that's kind of what inspired what I said before about going to Georgia versus going to Indiana. But this, like, Kurt Cignetti, Kirby Smart, head-to-head for a transfer quarterback. Like, let's see.
Yeah, Mendoza would bring that element that Rourke doesn't have, which is the escapability, the improvisation, the mobile aspect that he brings as a quarterback. Is he as good of a thrower, like, in his reads as Curtis Rourke? Probably not. But he's good enough, he's close enough to where he's probably a better prospect than Rourke because he has that mobility, the improvisation, you know, 98 yards with my boys mentality that I would love to have on this team. I think he'd be a great fit for what we're trying to build here. And it really does. He's got to be circled on this list at this point because he is number one. If I want anything for Christmas, it's Fernando Mendoza.
100%. Like I said, he's literally the only thing on my list. Once that domino falls, like, it's not going to be tough to get a receiver to come play for him. Like, Mikey Matthews is, I believe he plays in the slot.
He's a slot guy with this game.
A slot guy from Cal. Like, obviously played with Mendoza last year. Like, that would be a guy we could look at to bring in along with Mendoza. But everything starts and stops with the quarterback. And if we don't have a quarterback, then we're both big fans of Tyler Cherry and Fernando's younger brother, Alberto Mendoza. They're both freshmen, going to be sophomores going into next year. But you can't just go into a season with two true sophomores as the only two scholarship quarterbacks on your roster. That's just a, you just can't do that.
Which is why we're also going to need to bring in a backup. And I have some names circled that I think might be a little, you know, what do you want to call them? Like, might be getting ahead of myself here. Maybe it's not realistic, you know? I'm circling, you know, we talk about production over potential. With that number two spot, in theory, if we get Mendoza, QB2 spot, it makes sense to go after a guy that is looking to develop, might be looking for playing time, but also mostly looking just to develop and find a good program and just have a role. Malachi Nelson is out there. He's a former five-star, former number one quarterback in his class. It was USC, then went to Boise State trying to get the starting job, lost the job. Now he's taking official visits to UTEP. I think that's worth a phone call for the QB2. Like, hey, come here, develop, and maybe you can have the starting job next year. Maybe. You got to earn it.
I mean, I hear you in terms of, like, throwing darts, but also that just, like, flies in the face of everything that has ever come out of Kurt Cignetti's mouth and anything the staff has ever told us about the way they evaluate players. It's production over potential. It's, we got to see something on the field from you, which is why it was a little, not that Pribula didn't play this year. He was worked into the offense a little bit, but it's not like Pribula had, was taking first team snaps all year. Like, he had tape. To be a quarterback one.
He has tape.
He had tape, least. But it wasn't, he wasn't like a established starter.
Yeah.
Mendoza is exactly the type of guy they look for, but he's also exactly the type of guy a lot of teams look
like
for.
Like Georgia. Really, he's also the type guy Georgia looks for.
Yeah, you know, a guy who's really good at playing quarterback.
Pause. We're in a recruiting battle with Georgia right now.
A serious
by one. By the way, but no, people just for are people that don't realize Indiana's where we're at being... in year two. Year two. We're not even at year two yet. We're in the offseason of year one. And we're in a recruiting battle with Georgia for the top transfer quarterback in the portal. Just let that sink in for a little bit. Just let it sink in. Let it digest. Let it. Whether or not we win that battle or not, which we kind of need to. Kind of need to win that battle. Because Georgia, they don't get them. They're going Gunnar Stockton next year. Like, they'll be fine. Or, I don't even know.
Well, you
I was talking about how Carson Beck shouldn't even be going in the first place. Dude had reconstructive shoulder surgery on his throwing arm today. Today. It is December 23rd, 2024. He just had reconstructive. He had, I don't know if it's reconstructive. He had shoulder surgery on his throwing shoulder today. Today. And if I'm an NFL GM, I'm not taking him round one. His whole thing was about his arm. Now his arm just got repaired. Not probably not even to see him throw in the NFL draft process. Fernando Mendoza should go to Indiana on the fact that Carson Beck isn't necessarily gone. And they have Gunnar Stockton there. Another five-star quarterback. Four-star. Whatever. I like our chances here. We need to get him. Obviously, when Georgia comes knocking, you're going to answer the call. I like our chances here. I think Carson Beck comes back. It just doesn't make sense to me for him to go. For just as like a, if I was in his inner circle, I'd be telling him to go back. Because he didn't have the best tape this year. He threw a lot of bad picks. And that got the decision-making red flags for him. And now he's repairing his arm, which was the whole, like, the whole thing about him. And you're watching Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers eat in the NFL right now. Is he a Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey merchant? Who knows? Who knows? He might be. So, like, that's what I'm thinking as, like, a talent evaluator. I'm sure other NFL people are thinking the same thing. You know, I'd recommend him to stay for another year and just have Fernando Mendoza come to Indiana. Those are two separate things. Like, whether or not Fernando Mendoza was going after Indiana or Alabama or whatever, like, I'd be telling Carson Beck he should be staying. He should. He should stay in college one more year. 98 yards of my boys to Indiana, Bloomington. Back to the QB2 the thing. I have another name for QB2. Devin Brown, number 33 quarterback at Ohio State. I think that would be awesome if we had a number 33
I would
quarterback as our backup. That'd be so fun.
because I've listened to a couple Ohio State podcasts. I know how their fan base feels about Devin Brown. They fucking love that guy. I don't think he would ever come to Indiana. But yeah, I mean to leave Ohio State to go to Indiana to be the backup, especially with the way that kid is full-blown like Ohio State till he dies, like that's a pipe dream. But no, as in terms of a competitor and a guy in the you'd love to have in the room, like fuck yeah, I'd love to have Devin Brown in this quarterback room. That'd be awesome.
We need a
He'd
QB2
compete for the
though.
starting job for
We need
sure.
a QB2.
But no, he's not. That's not. He's a guy who's going to transfer out to a
We'll
starting job.
see.
He's
We'll
not going
see
to
what teams
transfer
come
to a
knocking
winning
on
job.
Taven. Maybe he comes back. You never know. Guys come back from the portal all the time. So, Taven would be another option at the backup spot. Have him compete with Mendoza. Learn. He already knows the system. It'd be a great fit. And then next on my list, I have running back, and I have a name written down. This is the only I only have names written down for quarterback and running back.
You want another running
I
back?
wrote down Roman Hemby, who committed to Indiana today. So I can
I was about to
it,
say, cross him
Christmas came
off.
early for me.
Christmas did come early. This dude's fucking awesome.
Basically a guy that came in as a true freshman at Maryland and got really good production right away. And he's been there for 3 years now. He had a great game against Maryland. He's kind of slowed down. You could blame that on Maryland. Honestly, put him in a good system. Like we saw, he was eating when they had Taulia Tagovailoa and they could throw the ball. They couldn't really do that this year with Billy Edwards. Didn't have as good of a season as he normally does. This is a great addition. Running back one on day one. Him, Black, Beebe. Going to be a great running back room moving forward. Got Martin and Kuono in the wings as well. Two of those 38 freshmen that we keep bringing up. Tons of depth in that room. Running back room is set right now. Pending whatever's going on with BB, but it sounds like he recommitted since we last recorded. Next
Yeah, I got
on the list.
not much to add there.
Next on the list, slot receiver. I mentioned this before, starting slot. We have the seven scholarship receivers right now. We need one more, and it's a starting slot. We can talk about moving Surratt to Coop and Coop to around and filling in that, slot role. Those two are outside guys. They're outside guys. We need a true slot. Casey Concepcion, maybe we put a last minute push on him now that we're, in the running now, full go. In terms of recruiting, we are in a dead period starting today, so it's kind of late to the ball game here. But maybe we cheat. Maybe we talk to him anyways. Maybe we talk about
Hey,
Mike.
listen,
And
Hart,
honestly, like I wouldn't mind bringing in a guy from Mendoza that he's familiar with. Bring in a Mikey Matthews to start at that slot. He's a young kid. He's a true sophomore this year. He would have 2 more years of eligibility with the program. Bring him in as the starting slot. Mix in Kendrick Bond. Get Chandler some tick. See if Becker can maybe play the slot. He seems a little tall for it, but he's more of an outside guy. Lot to work with. Maybe Chandler goes in the slot. Who knows? But I would like to see another vet come in at the receiver spot, take over that role, that the hole that we had two slot guys leave. Price and Key Williams are leaving. So got a lot of production to fill between those two. Mikey Matthews also returned punts, and punt returner is a need. So Mikey Matthews could be the answer here.
A package deal, two for
Yeah.
one.
I also and to round out the offensive needs list, you need a right tackle and a center. Interior O-lineman. We can move maybe Bray Lynch to center, but I think it'd be great if we could just plug in Lynch and Evans at the guard, bring back Carter Smith at left tackle, and then we could bring in a center. And a right tackle, obviously the best that we can find, obviously, if it's NFL talent. I wrote, for some of these, I wrote NFL talent. Like, obviously, if we can find an NFL talent at these roles, we should probably get it, obviously. Like, yeah, if we want to beat Notre Dame, we need more NFL talent. Like, that's just clear as day.
What do we need? list says good football players. Yeah. Like, okay, yeah. Cool. Go find. Yeah, let's go get the good ones.
And you need a starting right tackle and a starting center to replace Wettig and Kadick. And then from there, if we get those guys, we have a true three deep, if scholarship O-lineman. And that's what you look for in terms of roster building. You look for 15 scholarship O-line, so then you have in your three deep all scholarship O-linemen. That's what you want. So you have the depth, you have guys developing, you have true freshmen at the threes, you got, you know, true sophomores up at the twos, and then, you know, you got your starters are your starters, your best players. That's what you look for. And a lot of I've seen UCLA teams that neglected the O-line, and that was clearly our biggest point of weakness in that Notre Dame game. And that's what drives programs into the ground, is not taking care of the O-line development. I know Cignetti knows that. He's not an idiot. Best roster builder in college football. Is a claim I'm making yet to be seen. We'll see it over a year as things progress. But, yeah, right tackle, center, key needs for us. Key.
100% agree. And it's funny. I've been trying to figure out, like, who those targets could possibly be, because there hasn't been a ton of smoke specifically on the offensive line. There's been a lot of smoke on the defensive line for the Hoosiers, but there hasn't been a ton of smoke on the offensive line. And so it's going to be interesting to see. We might be looking at maybe getting a couple guys that are going to transfer out of these playoff teams. Maybe it's more so you look at that, kind of what they did with Wettig, where they brought him in the spring, and you look at those, like, the guys who kind of figure out they're getting phased out and they can come work with Bosted because he's unbelievable at, you know, figuring out the right roles for these guys. But yeah, it's not like there's a ton out there in terms of
what we can do at those spots. And I totally understand. A lot of those guys might still be playing football right now. The portal's a long game. We got a lot of players that are still going to enter the portal before spring. There'll be something. It'll be interesting to see who we bring in at those spots. But if we're not bringing in any O-linemen, I'll be a little worried. Definitely need a right tackle.
No, we're gonna bring people in. I just don't know who they're going to be yet.
Yeah, exactly. And then I have three spots on my defensive wish list. A Kamara replacement. It's three of them are D-line. I think the linebacker room is pretty set right now. Obviously, if you can bring in a stud linebacker to go to pair with Fisher without having to start Jones and Hardy, I'm all for it. But I don't think that's the biggest need right now. I think Jones and Hardy are good enough to fill in starting next year. So we need a Lynnell Carr replacement, an upgrade from Lynnell Carr. I have a Kamara replacement listed here. That could be Mikhail Kamara. That could be. It could be Mikhail Kamara. So he can make Christmas come early by committing that he's coming back next year. And then I know we brought in Ratcliffe and Wheeler, and we already have Tucker and Burris, but can't have too many interior D linemen. Can't. Bring in another top nose, like a CJ West replacement. Like CJ West was our best player on the field against Notre Dame, and we need to find a guy to replace that, because I love what we did with Burris and Wheeler and Tucker, and I haven't seen too much on Ratcliffe, honestly. I kind of probably need to break down his film a little more, but I know he's not a nose, so I'm curious to see what we do at the nose spot, because it could end up being we just go Wheeler Burris right now as the starters.
Well, a guy whose name, because again, there hasn't been a ton of smoke outside of like Hemby popped up a little bit last week. Mendoza, obviously, is the big one. And then, obviously, the guys who have already committed. But Jared Dawson, he's in the portal from Louisville. That's a guy whose name has quietly been connected to the Hoosiers. 6'2", 305 pounds, big dude. So that could be an interior defensive line target. But, again, there hasn't been... It's not like there are these like giant smoke signals like there are with Mendoza, where it's like crystal ball has got him to Indiana and all that. It's like these are all kind of rumors. So they're and like you said, like we just hit the dead period and we don't pick back up until January 6th. So
fifth.
Okay. So it's not going to be a quiet couple weeks, because what, players can reach out to teams, right?
Yeah, players can reach out to teams. Teams can't reach out to players.
And we know that rule is being broken left and right.
Obviously. It's one of the most common infractions in college sports would be the initiating contact with a player during a dead period is the most common one out there. Happens all the time, actually. It's kind of honestly like you get a slap on the wrist and it could be worth it.
Who else is on your portal wish list?
Well,
bro?
It's D line, the Kamara replacement nose, Jared Dawson would fill in at the nose, a top edge rusher to pair on the other side of Kamara. You know, I love Lenell Carr. I think he did a lot of good things. If we could have another Kamara on the other side as a stud, well, we have Ndukwe and Collins that are on the come up.
And Landino is going to be a factor.
Landino's
next year
not.
Mario Landino.
He's not going to play that stud spot though.
He's not going to play stud, but he's going to factor into the defensive line for sure.
He's going to back up Kamara, and he's going to come in. They're going to put him at different spots, and they're going to. I can already see like with what they have now, they could bring in a third down pass rush of Kamara, Landino, Burris, and Wheeler, and that would be pretty damn good. In terms of everyday stud, right now it's Turvey and Ndukwe and Collins, kind of fighting for a starting spot. I don't know, man. I love those guys. We might need more. So it mostly comes down to the D-line. And then pressing needs.
I don't think it's disrespectful to say you like Turvey, but he was a walk-on who we're expecting to get a scholarship this offseason. But he was still a walk-on. Like, if you can get a guy who was...
Four-star.
Just further... Yeah. Further developed, more physically gifted. Like, it's... Like, these are the realities of sport. There are just levels to athletes and levels to... And that doesn't mean you're going to be more effective or less effective, but we're not explaining anything to any... Like,
with our staff, we get those talented guys in, they will get the job done. I promise you. Just bring in the right guys. I trust whoever they bring in. I know they can evaluate talent. Will they be good enough to get us into playoff contention? Yes. Will they be good enough to win us a national title? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, and then my last one is I wrote down NFL Rover. We need like the Terry Jones replacement. We're already pretty set at all the DB spots. Brought in Knighton as another corner. We already brought all of our top four corners back for next year on top of six freshmen that are on the roster starting next year. So corner safety, we're looking good. We could use another safety to play that Rover spot. Because I really don't see anyone on the roster that can play Rover besides Farrell. And then even then, we'd have to bump Bonds into starting safety. And then we'd have Reese and Boyd backing them up. I guess that's something they can do. They can move Farrell back to Rover in theory. But it would be nice to have another one more DB. Would be great.
He's just a guy with experience. Because like it's not against the talent of any of this freshmen. Actually, I'm really excited about this 2025 freshman class coming in and the 2024 freshman. But the one thing they don't have is experience. And so to get a guy in there with experience, especially a guy who's played at a high level, would obviously make this defense a lot better.
Yeah, we are going to be a lot younger next year. So as many transfers that we can fit on the roster would be ideal. We're going to be, to break it down, 70-ish scholarship guys right now, more than half are freshmen. 38 freshmen on this. Of the 85 scholarship spots will be freshmen next year. Or at least guys that came in the last 2 years. We're going to be young, so as much talent and depth and experience that we can bring in is only going to set us up for success in 2025.
100%. And obviously, guys are still entering the portal, like we alluded to earlier. Like, there is a rule that states, I think, like, what, any team playing after December 28th, so that would include every team that advanced past the first round of the playoff. Those teams, once their season ends, those kids have a five-day window to hit the portal. So the madness isn't done by any means. In fact, actually, a lot more talented guys are probably going to hit the portal. We haven't been following these teams nearly as close, obviously, as we're following Indiana. So who knows who's upset, who's not getting the ball. Like, who? God knows what problems people are running into with the teams and the era of college football we live in. Maybe somebody feels like they can get more money somewhere else and guess what? Indiana's got the bag.
Yeah, if I wanted to spend money on certain spots, it'd be the D-line. Spend money there. I think corner we can make do with what we got. And then O-line, D-line is where we should be spending our money this year. And quarterback, obviously. Every year should be spent on quarterback. Quarterback, O-line, D-line, everything else can kind of work itself out in terms of what we do and our development and our scheme. Yeah, that's where I'd want the money to be spent, would be the trenches, because that's – and the quarterback. It seems too obvious. Seems like I'm speaking to first graders here about how to build rosters, but that's just the reality. That's where we need it, and it showed against Notre Dame. I'm just trying to figure out how to beat Notre Dame. That's what I'm on. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, get bigger, get faster, get stronger, and get smarter. And they will after another year in the Cignetti system. Obviously, the guys who come back are just going to be that much better. And then the people they inject into the new scheme, like Jose Wheeler, who is the defensive tackle they brought in from Western Kentucky, I'll continue to sing his praises. Like, that dude is a really, really good football player. And I'm really excited to see him unleashed in Brian Haynes' defense. That's the thing, too, is like the defensive staff, especially with the way they look at and utilize defensive linemen, if you're a guy who just wants to get after the quarterback and wreak havoc, that would be the number one destination, because you have the opportunity, you have the stage, and you have the, like, you're going to have the chance to go make plays.
Yeah, we have a chance to be a lot better than we were this year, next year. We have a big chance. Just depends on what we do in the portal. It all comes down to it. And we have a tougher schedule next year. So, you know, we might not have the same record as we did, but we'll be a better team next year. It seems very, very likely at this point, unless we shit the bed in the portal.
Agreed. 100% agree. Yep. So we preliminary discussions to be back on Friday to discuss the next round matchups. We got Texas and Arizona State. We got Penn State and Boise State. Notre Dame takes on Georgia. And we got our SoCal Hot Sauce game of the week, Oregon versus Ohio State, in Pasadena, in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I finally got all my Christmas shopping done, thanks to SoCalHotSauce.com. Got a lot of people 4-packs. I'm going to be wrapping them tonight, giving them over. Yeah, get your 4-pack, SoCalHotSauce.com. Use promo code SIGSINSIDE, 10% off any order. I always recommend the 4-pack and above. You can get cases as well if you want to go crazy. I think there's like 30 in them. But they have... Basically, you get free shipping if you buy more than 4 bottles. So that's 10%. And then you get 10% off with the promo code SIGSINSIDE. That's basically a $20 purchase for 4 bottles. It's not bad. Not bad at all. And it's really good. The hot avocado is a staple in my household now. I think I've said it multiple times. It's the reason why I'm getting it for everyone for Christmas. It's a really good hot sauce. And yeah, Merry Christmas, everyone.
SoCalHotSauce.com, promo code SIGSINSIDE.
Two words.
10% off all orders. SIGSINSIDE, Indiana Football Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at SIGSINSIDEPOD. You can follow Brad at Bradley_Loomis8. You can follow me at Alec Keiser. Check out KeySportsNetwork.com. I wrote a couple articles this past weekend, one leading into the game that was pretty brash, one coming out of the game, just saying, like, you know, this isn't over. We'll be back. But, yeah, you know, more things are coming to KeySportsNetwork.com. We're going to discuss the offseason plans for SIGS Inside and kind of what we're going to do with the portal and breaking news and stuff like that. But, yeah, this isn't the end for Indiana football. This is just the beginning. And that's the exciting part. Check out Friends and Collaborators Instrumental Volume 1 on streaming platforms now. Shout out to the boys Wave, Nick Skrills, Signar. Check those guys out on Instagram. It's the intro song 1621. The outro song is The Sweet Sound of Butter Symphony.
Yeah, if I could do one thing over, you teed me up with that second ad read at the end. I should have incorporated it when I was getting real hot about Kirk Herbstreit and everything going on. And then I've been like, oh, I'm hot right now. Speaking of hot. And then SoCalHotSauce.com. Boom. I think that would have been a lot. If I had changed anything from this banger of an episode, that's what I would change.
It's the little things. We just keep getting better every day.
We'll watch film and get better. And it's all about the process. Every play is Play by play, 6 seconds of play. Every play is a life and history of its own. Yeah.
100%. Thank you to all the seniors. Thank you for all those who chose and bought in and believed and put the blood, sweat, and tears and dedication into this Indiana football season. And Hoosier fans, like, doesn't matter what anybody else says, nobody can take this from
Yes,
us.
thank you. Thank you, seniors, and it's only the beginning. Thank you for laying the groundwork, and the best is yet to come. Good luck in the NFL.